It's Storylines Midwest. The number to call is 866-255-2762 to join our conversation today. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor. Storylines is a 13-week series on Midwestern literature. We're trying to take a look at our Midwestern lives through the mirror of our literature. Oh, we're going to have a show on Huckleberry Finn, and we'll have one on Toni Morrison's Beloved. We'll have some Chicago poets in addition to several other novels.
Today, we're talking about where you come from and how that influences who you are. Michael Martone is the editor of a collection of essays called Townships, and all of these essays are written by Midwestern writers reflecting on that question. They write about the house they grew up in, the land their family lived on, from the shores of Lake Superior to Toledo, Ohio. We want to hear your stories today at 866-255-2762. That number again is 866-255-2762. We'll be continuing our conversation with Michael Martone in a few minutes, but first, here's an excerpt from one of the essays in Townships. It's called In the First Place of My Life, and it's by Ray Young Bear.
In the first place of my life. It is often said that before the Almighty Creator took the red-colored clay in his cosmic hands to gently shape and mold the first human beings, he wanted to be absolutely sure these people would have a knowledgeable leader who would guide them through the suffering and beauty of earthly existence. This leader, he must have felt, had to be a direct part of himself. To ensure the best possible guidance for these people in a manner similar to the extensive preparation he had done for the anticipated arrival of these people, the Creator tore out a piece of his own heart and created Ugima, the sacred chief. Considering the last turbulent and painful days the Creator experienced before the jealous gods sent the great fire and flood after him, it seemed appropriate that a progeny of wise decision-makers be comprised exclusively of his own sacred flesh and blood. This he did. The beginning of personal memory and history is perhaps the most important connection I have with Mamiwanega, the young Ugima, or sacred chieftain, who founded and initiated the purchase of the tribal settlement in 1856. From a distant and vague time, his grandson, Gatwawusa, my maternal grandfather, reached downward from his wooden frame bed and called me with large, outstretched arms and encouraging words. Gishko, Bianayu, come here.
Ray Young Bear lives on the Meskwaki Tribal Settlement. It's just outside of Tama, Iowa. The settlement is unique because it's not a reservation. In 1856, Ray Young Bear's great-great-grandfather gathered what was left of the Meskwaki tribe and raised the money to purchase 5,000 acres in their home range. The Meskwaki do not live on government land. In spite of that fact, the Meskwaki did not escape the poverty that's all too familiar to many Native Americans around the country. But in the mid-90s, they founded what has become a very successful casino, and thanks to the casino, the tribe has been able to provide housing for most of its members, and they're finally in the process of building a new school. I had an opportunity to visit the settlement not long ago, and Ray was going to show me around, but unfortunately, I arrived in the middle of one of those famous Iowa thunderstorms. So we sat down in a classroom in the old settlement school, and I asked Ray what keeps him coming back to the settlement.
I guess the culture itself, in that there is a language that we all speak and have in common, and that is, to me, an acknowledgement of who we are. The culture that exists here is very unique in that it comes from a time way, way back, immemorial, etc. And I think those are the things, in addition to family and then the landscape itself, these are the factors that make anyone long for home. It's a nostalgia trip, only this one never quits. You always want to come back, even if you're just going for a week.
Do you think of yourself as a Midwesterner, part of the United States?
I think of myself as a Midwestern Native American. And I tend to get riled up when people on the East or West Coast make jokes about Midwesterners. I tend to get defensive, even though it's not directed toward me as a Native American. But I do know that there are times when we in the Midwest are criticized for being somewhat lackadaisical with various aspects that Americans need to keep up with one another. But I discovered that that's not the case in that I think Midwesterners are more thoughtful. I think they have more time to assess life's problems and life, the wonderful things in life, and not dwell upon the negative as it's been done in the East and West Coast.
With your growing up on the settlement, can you tell me what life was like then? Were you a prosperous group of people?
We were perhaps living on the fringes or within the waters of poverty. Of course, in reflecting back today, I can see very little difference. I was a very happy young child, and I never had any kind of longing or awareness for materialistic needs because that was never part of our upbringing. But I do recall the first time that I did receive metal toys, plastic bullets, and that in itself was perhaps my first real taste of what toys were about, and that toys broke, and then I would need some more again.
Life here on the settlement has changed dramatically with the success of the Meskwaki Hotel and Casino. People here have nice houses. You're building a new school. Raising your children in this environment, what do you want to make sure they know about being Meskwaki?
I think I would like to teach my children about the creation myths and how they relate to all aspects of life. I would like to teach them about language. I would like to teach them about religion. History as well is very important. Already we are discussing how this land was once ours and how this land is deteriorating fast due to ecology and so forth, and it's just one learning experience, and it all evolves from our lives, from being Native Americans. Much of what happened with Native Americans, and then much of what happened with the African Americans, along with the Chinese Americans, we all have something in common in that we were pretty much abused by Americans, and I find it incredible to this day still to find a white American still being very bigoted toward Meskwakis, especially in this region. I know most Americans would say there's no bigotry, but I can guarantee you that there is to some degree. It's just not as overt as it used to be. It comes in subtle ways through legal maneuvering, lawmaking in the state, lawmaking at the nation, and the Native Americans themselves, fortunately, are assembling lobbyists. They're paying people to represent them so our voice can be heard in Washington, D.C., and that's nice.
Poet Ray Youngbear is a lifelong resident of the Meskwaki tribal settlement near Tama, Iowa. His essay, In the First Place of My Life, can be found in Townships, edited by Michael Martone. This is Storylines Midwest, 866-255-2762.
When homesteaders came to the Midwest, they came from all over Europe. Germans, Swedes, Norwegians, Russians, Poles, and of course, many Chinese workers built the railroads that crossed the Midwest. The Midwest still attracts immigrants from all over the world. There's now a large Bosnian population in Waterloo, Iowa. There are Hispanic populations all over the Midwest. And there are more than 300,000 Arab Americans living in metropolitan Detroit.
The stereotype may be, and we like to think, that we're friendly, but the Midwest has certainly seen its share of hate crimes and hostilities, particularly since the September attacks.
Joe Giha is one of the contributors to the collection Townships. His essay, Where I'm From Originally, draws attention to the fact that we may all be Midwesterners, but we're not all the same.
You're not from around here, are you? The man puts it like a statement, but I recognize the question that's being implied. Having lived around here for nearly a dozen years, I also know that if I don't answer as expected, I'll be leaving the door open for the outright questions that are certain to follow. Where are you from? And, no, but I mean, where originally? Asked openly, I ought to add, in a friendly spirit. Even so, I'm still not used to it. I try a smile. That's right, I say, and volunteer nothing more. I'm just asking for trouble, of course. So, where are you from? I turn and face the man fully now. Toledo, I tell him, which I know perfectly well isn't at all what he's asking. He looks to be a nice sort, a youngish grandfather. Why am I being so contrary? All he's doing is making small talk. It's a sunny autumn day, and here we found ourselves, two adults among children, my daughters, his grandkids, in line at a county fair carousel in Iowa. The white crispness of the short-sleeved shirt he has on, along with his hairless arms and clean, pink-tipped fingers, makes me think maybe he's a dentist. That, and his no-nonsense, persistent manner. Originally, he says, as if to specify. I answer, Ohio, Toledo, Ohio, pretending to specify too, since there is a Toledo, Iowa, not far from here. I'm behaving badly. Is it my fear of dentists? My frayed nerves from being with the kids all day? It's not as if this man's curiosity isn't understandable. After all, I don't look like I'm from around here. Here, being a part of the country that is more familiar with a blonde Scandinavian-Irish-German mix than with the olive skin and black curly hair common to people from Lebanon.
Joe Giha reading from his essay, Where I'm From Originally. Joe was born in Lebanon, but he moved to Toledo when he was 2 years old. He now lives in Ames, Iowa, and he teaches at Iowa State University. I asked him what he thinks the stereotypical Midwesterner is.
Well, yeah, there's a stereotypical everybody, actually. I think we want to be identified with groups because in a way that's kind of empowering, but it also, in other ways, it can be confining. But the standard American Midwesterner is blonde and blue-eyed and loves sports. And I think the best example is what I heard from Lenny Bruce, the comedian who said that everybody who's not Italian or Jewish is the Midwesterners.
Do you think that there is a stereotypical personality or a way of presenting oneself that is Midwestern?
Yeah, you don't ask a lot of questions. You're friendly, but in a very surface way. My wife, who's Jewish from New York, came here actually a few years before I did, and she was standing at the supermarket line one day, and the clerk said hi to her in such a nice, smiley way that Fern kept wondering, where do I know her from? Where do I know her from? She wasn't used to being to people being just casually friendly like that, being from New York.
In your essay, you write about being asked the question repeatedly, where are you from? No, originally, yeah. Where are you from?
Yeah.
Does that question bother you?
It did bother me, yes. It bothered me originally because what's implied behind it is you don't look like you're one of us. So where are you from? What kind are you? Is essentially what I'm being asked. Although being asked in a very nice and friendly way. I mean, these people were very nice. But they wanted to know, where are you from? You don't look like us. Where are you from? And, you know, if I were more secure in myself, I would have said, oh, from Lebanon. But no, I used to, you know, jerk them around a bit, you know, because I had my own issues to deal with. I didn't realize that I did want to be different, but I felt like they were imposing difference on me, rather than myself establishing it for myself.
Did you wish that you were somewhere else then?
Yeah. I would have rather been more around my kind, the people who understood my jokes, but that wasn't necessarily an ethnic thing. The Midwest in Ohio is a little different than the Midwest in Iowa. And so Ohio had more of a mix, Toledo especially. You know, had neighborhoods, the Greek, the Hungarian, the Polish, different types of areas, and you saw different kinds of people more than you did here. And I think the humor was a little more Eastern, a little more urban.
Do you think that being in the heartland, right, the center of the Midwest, has shaped who you are?
Yeah, it has. It's allowed me to be different in a benign community, really. And it's the people have I've come to really love being here and love the people here. They accepted me. It was the problems that I had that I talk about and where I'm from originally were really more my own problems that I was solving myself than problems that others had with me.
Do you still get asked that question?
No, I've gotten older. My beard is white. My hair is thinning. And I just look like an old guy.
Do you think that the Midwest has gotten more diverse in the past 30-some years?
Yes, it has, very much so, especially around where I live. And I think it's nothing but to the good. We have quite a few Sudanese moving in now. Before that, many people from Southeast Asia, and a lot of people from Bosnia, Serbia, and the Balkans. And I'll tell you, the restaurants are great. I mean, really, if you saw the restaurants when I came here in 77, chicken fried steak, you know, everywhere you went. But, well, you've lived here, you know.
All too well. Joe Giha teaches and writes in Ames, Iowa. It's Storylines Midwest. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor. You can give us a call at 866-255-2762. We've been talking today with Michael Martone, who's the editor of Townships. And we had a question there.
Yes, we do. Bob is on the line in Nevada, Iowa, and Michael Martone is back with us. Hello, Bob. Hello, Bob. Maybe we've lost Bob. All right, well, we'll move right along. Thanks for coming back, Michael. And actually, we did have a call while we were listening to Joe Giha from Susan in Ames, Iowa, for you. And she wants to ask you, why, if you say that in the Midwest we haven't told our stories yet, why is there such a liking for the Lake Wobegon stories from Garrison Keillor?
Well, that's just one story, isn't it? I mean, it's just one part again. If the Midwest is made up of all this disparate, all these different squares, all of these different places, there's a lot of stories to be told. I think in some ways it's a danger when we think of stereotypes too. It's a danger from a writer's point of view to think that all of our stories are going to be the same, and we sort of assign a chair or a seat to the Midwestern writer, and that is the Midwestern writer. That there's only one sort of experience. I think the success of Garrison is because he is so specific. That specificity connects with other parts of the Midwest and other people's experience of the Midwest. But there still are, a lot of different ways of looking at that experience, I think.
I think people tend to see Garrison Keillor as just being so funny. I just happened to have reviewed those last two books of his, and there's a real darkness in some of those books. I mean, yes, there's humor and there's nostalgia, but there's a real darkness there from time to time.
Well, I believe that. I mean, back to what I was saying a little bit earlier about, having those two simultaneous feelings, the sort of warm, cozy, heartland feeling, but that feeling of incredible loneliness. My roommate in college left Indiana, went to work out in South Dakota, told me when he was first in South Dakota trying to sleep out under the stars. And the stars themselves, just the vastness of it, he had never seen that before growing up in a sort of medium-sized city, South Bend. It made him physically ill. I think there is a darkness and a sadness. We like to think of, say, Iowa with all those pretty little farmsteads, but there are ghost towns in Iowa. Perhaps one characteristic too of the place was it was settled so quickly that the frontier swept through it so quickly that the migration from the south was so quick. But right now, the migration is out of the Midwest so much, and so things sort of never stick. They never get put down, and that is the sadness of our incredible mobility.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 866-255-2762. That number again is 866-255-2762. And Michael, while we're talking about the dark side of the Midwest,
the dark side.
I think that there's,
You know, there's a dark side to this idea that all Midwesterners are friendly, accepting, and open, because for so long, especially in the rural areas, we've been a very homogeneous population. And now, with many other kinds of people coming into the Midwest, there's not always acceptance.
Well, that's true. As with any sort of, I was just thinking of what Joe Geha had said. There, you know, it's another great drama, right? The strength of diversity is in its own sort of confusion. You again would like to have sort of control over things and have everything sort of perfect, but. Well, you know, there's that great line in The Music Man. It says, "We'd like to welcome you to Iowa, but we'll never mention it again." And so, you know, for those who stay in place, there's always the boundary of people who move through it. That's what The Music Man's about, a salesperson sort of moving through it, right? So there's always that suspicion. There's always that suspicion actually grows out of what we usually think of as a good thing, community, family. But if you have those types of groups, by definition, you're going to have others, and they will always be suspect.
I did, however, when Joe was talking and he talked about the surface friendliness, I felt myself getting a little bit defensive here on the other side of the question, thinking, well, no, I mean, that friendliness is often much deeper than the surface. I mean, that was one of the wonderful things when I came back to the Midwest. I felt that this was real. So, you know, I mean, it's perhaps we're a little deeper and darker than we might think sometimes, but on the other hand, let's value some of this friendliness that we do have.
Well, as I said earlier, I think really the underrated characteristic of the Midwesterner has to do with this subtleness, this sort of depth. As I write someplace else, you know, I grew up on a continental divide in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It was only 10 feet high, though, unlike the mountains. So I was just, you know, there's always a hesitancy. There's always... you know, things are pulled back. Another Midwestern writer, Ernest Hemingway, of course, always was talking about the submerged story, the tip of the iceberg, but it's really the iceberg underneath the surface that is the real story. So understatement and those big blank spaces between the words, what's between the lines, I think is really indicative.
Well, we've been talking about this the entire hour, but since you've talked to so many people from the Midwest about their stories and sought out Midwestern stories, how do you think we see ourselves?
It's funny. When I taught for a while in Massachusetts, and when people there sort of asked that question, I kept coming back to the whole sort of the way we see ourselves is exactly the way we've been talking about it, is that we're always very conscious that we are, again, sort of out of the mainstream. It's not natural in a way to be a Midwesterner. And so our sort of existential problem as Midwesterners is what does it mean to be a Midwesterner? I think Southerners, where I live now, I think Southerners don't fret about this as much, but it is the Midwest where identity becomes so important, because the identity is so hidden and so beyond us and is so unestablished. As I said earlier in the show, that's the mere fact that we're sort of talking about these same issues over and over and over again. It's trying to work it out, trying to sort of, like a dog circling to sleep, you know, trying to find a comfortable way into this issue of identity is the identity of the Midwesterner.
And it's still worth doing. We still have to do it.
It creates a lot of nice spinoff.
It does, yeah.
How do you think we should see ourselves?
Well... Well, I would. I'm all for abandoning the idea of the heartland. There was. I just read a wonderful essay in response to President Bush, say, using the heartland in all of his speeches, no matter where he went. he was in the heartland, and trying to sort of come up with a different metaphor. I mean, I think the same thing is true of the whole idea of the land. I think, you know, we must remember and must also promote and be true to the notion that it's a lot of dirt and mud as well. And I think we're always on the verge, always on the edge of taking some of these strengths of the Midwest and making them, you know, or only seeing them in a sort of romantic way, with a romantic lens, as opposed to the sort of realism, which also is, of course, present in Midwestern writers. But I think, you know, I think the in looking for an identity, often we sort of get caught, as they do in Indiana, they, you know, constantly say, ain't God good to Indiana, and sort of really don't address what, say, rural life is. Farms now are industrial landscapes, especially in Iowa. They're huge industrial, highly scientific, highly technical landscapes. And it's a long way from some of the natural romantic view of the world. So if that's the way, if I wanted people to, you know, begin thinking about the Midwest, it's with trying to break through, or at least questioning some of those metaphors that come so easily to us.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's been great.
Michael, we've been talking with Michael Martone, the editor of Townships, which is a collection of essays about the Midwest. We have taken some of your calls at 866-255-2762. Michael is the editor of Townships. His most recent book is The Blue Guide to Indiana, and he is the director of the Program for Creative Writing at the University of Alabama.
By the way, remember that phone number, because we'd like to hear from you with what you think it means to be a Midwesterner. You can go ahead and leave a message on our voicemail about it. It's 866-255-2762. For more information on Storylines Midwest or the books we're reading, you can visit our website at storylines.ala.org, or you can check out your local public library. Participating libraries have copies of the books, program schedules, and even discussion guides if you want to start a Storylines book club.
Storylines Midwest is produced by Tamar Charney. Our engineer is Bob Skahn.
We had production help from Rebecca Williams, Amanda McWhorter, Allison Zatorski, and Dale Owens.
The executive producer of the Storylines America Project is Paul Zales.
Storylines Midwest comes to you from the studios of Michigan Radio at the University of Michigan. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor.
Thanks for listening.
Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.
The Mississippi River. She flows from Lake Itasca to the Gulf of Mexico, through farmland, small towns, and big cities.
She's been the center of commerce, a means of transportation, and a never-ending source of inspiration.
The Mississippi and the book that keeps her legend alive. Huckleberry Finn, next time on Storylines Midwest.